and they'll find him. They'll find a mom who says the worst thing, and they'll put him on there and try and make it seem like this person is representative of, you know, 2 billion people. And when you see that again and again and again and again for 25 years, it seeps in. And a lot of people who are otherwise good people are very much fooled by this narrative. And that's on the right and the left. It's an interesting variation, because I ran for office. I kind of study politics. I obviously spent a lot of times with Republicans, a lot of times with Democrats, but they're both fooled. You know, they're both kind of fooled by this narrative, by this never ending propaganda that we've had, that the goal is to dehumanize Muslims so that Americans will be willing to have their money stolen so that it can go to kill Muslims. Because if you don't dehumanize them, and you see a child dying in Gaza or Iraq or Afghanistan, and you see them as a child, a normal human is not going to support that. But if you can dehumanize them, that's the only way that the war machine survives.
Man, very, very solid points that you brought up. You ran for Senate. You talked about, I want to get your reaction when you see another current senator wasting time, resources, he's from Alabama, chasing a fake boogeyman on a taxpayer's dime.
Today, to talk about one of the greatest threats facing our country today, Islamic extremism. You know, 24 years ago, September 11, 2001, nearly 3,000 innocent Americans were murdered in a coordinated terrorist attack carried out by radical Islamic extremism. Those of us who lived through that day remember exactly where we were when those planes hit the buildings.
You're familiar with the senator from Alabama?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'm familiar with his anti-Sharia campaign. These folks, and his opinions are not unique, unfortunately. These folks go into two categories. Mm-hmm. A category of people that are very, very easily fooled and shouldn't be fooled after all these years, and a category who's just been co-opted and bought out.
Two categories.
Two categories. Yeah. Some of them are good people that are fooled, and it's hard to tell. I always like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I don't know about Tommy Tuberville, because here's the thing. If you believe what they believe, you can't blame them. You know, I would love to meet Tommy Robinson someday. I obviously disagree with him strongly on Islam, but if he believes what he says he believes, he does seem to be a genuine guy. I mean, in some ways, he's endearing. I can see why people like him, because he seems like a real guy. He seems like the kind of guy who'd be your neighbor and you'd hang out, and maybe I'd invite him over here and we watch a movie together. I wish we could, because giving him the benefit of the doubt, I think there's a chance if what he says is what he really believes, then he's been fooled. He's just wrong. He's just really, really wrong. And he's been fooled. And when you have billions and billions of dollars in propaganda trying to fool people, you can blame them for being wrong. It's still on them, but we don't have billions and billions of dollars in propaganda telling the truth, you know? So I give people benefit of the doubt, because I know a lot of Republicans. You know, I ran as Republican. A lot of Republicans are fooled. And by the way, like I say, left, they're fooled too. Different brand of fool. You know, they tend to believe different things. It's different marketing. It's Coke versus Pepsi. You know, the marketing people trying to fool each group will do a slightly different message. With the right, they try and appeal to, you know, American nationalism, Christianity a lot. You know, these are barbarians versus our good way of life, this kind of thing. And if you're fooled by that, if you really did think that these bunch of crazy bearded men are going to come out of caves and they're going to, you know, rape and destroy and bring Sharia, well, then you would probably be doing a good thing to fight them. The problem is that they're just fundamentally fooled. And I have hope. I would like to, you know, I'd love to meet Tommy and try and tell him why he's wrong. And I'd love to meet Tommy Tuberville, you know, this senator, and tell him why I think he's wrong. And I have talked to a lot of Republicans and people on the left as well about why they're wrong. Now, then there's the other category, like Ted Cruz, where he's just totally hopelessly co-opted. I don't think any amount of truth could change his opinion, because he's become an American second neocon. You know, there's a lot of people who are America second. They want to put Israel before America, which is just very strange to me. I mean, I have a big, big, big problem with Israel's policies towards Gaza. I don't have a problem with especially the Israeli people who are against this. And I never historically had a problem with the country other than this, you know, one extremely major thing. But the idea of putting it ahead of your own country, it's just very strange. It's strange to have so many members of Congress where they have a foreign flag. And it's just, if you said something, I tweeted a long time ago, I said, Portugal is our greatest ally. We must stand with Portugal no matter what. Anybody who speaks against Portugal is wrong. And people laughed because it just sounds weird. I mean, it's just a strange thing. Why would you do that? Portugal, Thailand, anybody? Why would you put any other country on such a pedestal that you have their flags in your offices and everything else? So there is some that are co-opted because there's a lot of money involved. There's a lot of power involved. And sadly, a lot of it is driven by people who are otherwise good people, but they're doing evil and supporting evil because they've been fooled. And you see that, like, one of the epicenters of it is New York. I've lived in New York City. I've worked in New York City. There's a lot of very, very anti-Muslim people in New York because they've been fooled, because they've been fooled by this propaganda narrative. And, you know, this senator, Tommy Tuberville, I don't know enough to know whether he's co-opted or fooled, but most people start as fooled. You know, this idea of Sharia is usually when somebody mentions Sharia in an argument, it's usually a sign of low IQ. You know, it's not like, this guy really knows his stuff. He's going to get me. There's better arguments than others. The Sharia argument is particularly silly because, where is this Sharia? Show me where, you know, and then you'll say, what do you think Sharia says? Oh, Sharia says beat women, kill gays, kill Christians and Jews. This. I say, well, where does it say that? Who says that? And then that's where the argument falls apart. That's how deep it is. It's skin deep. At best, they'll pull up some, you know, memory video of some crazy imam who has 300 followers who says something stupid and say, aha, see? This guy, well, that doesn't mean it's Sharia. You know, if you haven't noticed, there's a lot of Muslims who disagree on things. I mean, do you really think that the 4 or 5 million Muslims in this country believe this? It's just an absurd notion. Tommy Tuberville can't even tell you what Sharia is. It's a midwit level comment, you know, and same with Greg Abbott in Texas, governor of Texas. They had Epic City that was going to go in there. And he says, you know, no Sharia. You know, people think that that's being intellectual. Maybe because it's a non-English word. Maybe they think like, oh, I'm, you know, it's like all the people saying burqa, you know, like they learned what the burqa was. But 99% of the time, it's not even a burqa. It's a hijab. You know, they don't even know what burqa means, but they're like, stop the burqa. You know, it's like maybe they think they sound intelligent because they're using a foreign word like Sharia. You know, stop the Sharia. Well, you know, America has its own rules anyway. Even if Sharia is what you think it is, and it was written down, which it isn't, and if all the Muslims agree, which they don't, it wouldn't matter anyway, because America has its own rules. You know, you can't kill gay people in America. That's illegal. And it's illegal in the UAE too. You know, I do an event in the UAE every year, and I had a couple, you know, propaganda fed midwits who says, well, I'm not going to the UAE there. Anti-gay, like that's, you know, their big intellectual contribution. But I looked through the actual law in the UAE. It's called the UAE Penal Code. There's not a single anti-gay law. There's an anti-cross-dressing rule, but there's no anti-gay law at all. There sure as heck is no, you know, idea they're going to kill gay people. This is just, again, propaganda, and the kind of thing that would make people believe that about a place like UAE, of all places. It just shows the power of the propaganda, the power that people believe this. And maybe this senator is one of them who's been fooled. A lot of people have been.
What do you advise his constituents? What can they do? Muslims in that area of Alabama, good people, just people who are like, hold on, this is my taxpayer money. I mean, we have real fish to fry. We have so many challenges. We have so many real issues that we got to deal with. And now this guy's wasting time, resources, and getting paid. We're paying him. So can they call his office? Can they set up a meeting? You know, try to, you know, because this stuff is obviously easily debunked. What do you advise them to do instead of doing nothing?
That's a great idea. I think Muslims should be much more active in politics. I get it why a lot aren't. A lot of Muslims feel politically homeless. I feel politically homeless in some ways. There's a whole bunch of things I can't stand about the Republican Party. I don't like the wokes and the left either. I think they're both terrible. And the third party options, a huge number of Muslims voted the Green Party, but that's kind of a wasted vote also. So I get it. You know, I get it to the Muslims who don't want to be active because they don't feel like they have a home. But you can still, even if you don't even vote, you can still have your voice heard. You can write and call your congressman or your senator. If you can band together, even a group of 30 people or 50 people can make a difference. Because when they see a group, if you say, you know, the Muslim activist voter group of Alabama or whatever, it's a little scary to politicians because they say, oh, geez, this may only be 30 people, but I don't know. They might be
like here, particularly in Alabama. That's where the senator is from. If they
yes,
how would they band together? So they would the local masjids, the mosques, they come together.
Yeah. Anybody with initiative, any Muslim can, or anybody, non-Muslim too, but anybody can make a group and say, hey, here's my group.
How hard is it or not hard for them to set up a meeting with him in person? Is that something difficult? Can that happen?
Usually it's not that hard, especially if you have a group. The bigger the group, the easier it is. You know, and if you could get somebody to align with you, like a university or something, or if you say, hey, we have 1,500 members, they're probably going to take your call. And if they see you as completely adversarial, it might be harder. But if you reach out, you know, in a friendly way. And I think that more Muslims should be seen and be active in politics. Let people know that, you know, it's friends and neighbors and, you know, people in your community, people that they relate to say, oh, gee, that dentist, that doctor, that, you know, the masjid in my town. It's interesting because that, you know, we're New Hampshire is very low Muslim population. So, you know, the masjids are magnets for every Muslim in the area. So the one in, you know, nearby me, it's very, very, very diverse. You know, it reflects kind of like Islam in America. There's some converts, there's Indonesians and Malaysians, there's Gulf Arabs, there's African Arabs, there's, African American Black Muslims from America, some converts, some not. You know, so you have this quite a diverse group. And that's common in a lot of places other than places like Dearborn where it's a lot of Muslims. But most places in America, I think Alabama is probably similar to New Hampshire. And letting them know that, but that diversity is great because if you go to that masjid on a Friday, you're going to see, oh, the guy who owns the Mercedes dealership is Muslim. The guy who owns the gas station is Muslim. The doctor, the real rich doctor, the guy who is not rich at all, who's cleaning the floors. This guy, that you have a very diverse mix. And I wish politicians would go and I wish they would go to mosques and see who the Muslims in their community are. You know, the cartoon character version of the villain Muslims that they see on the propaganda is different than reality, of course. They're not thinking of, oh, the nice Lebanese mom of my friend who makes that really, really delicious food, or the guy named Fahad who owns the car dealership. They're not thinking of that. They're thinking of the mustache twisting bearded guy in a cave who hates America because it's free, you know, which is not a thing. Nobody hates America because it's free. I mean, it's not even a realistic villain. It's just a ridiculous cartoon character of something that doesn't exist. I don't know if anybody exists in the world who's sitting there saying, I hate, imagine somebody being 10,000 miles away and saying, yes, my religion tells me that I hate America because it's free. Yeah. Therefore, I want to kill them. Like, it's just like, come on, man. I like science fiction and comic books and stuff. I could come up with a better villain in 5 minutes. It's just not even believable on any, you know, with any critical thinking whatsoever. I mean, make it about something real. At least, I mean, there's plenty of real things you could make a villain over that would be more believable. But that's the thing. You have a lot of people who believe in this cartoon character version of what they think Muslims are, and they're not seeing the Muslims in their community. And that would be good to be seen in the community, invite politicians in. And I don't like to focus too much on politicians. I wish politicians had less power. I don't want to go groveling to them like some sort of slave. I'd rather have them leave us alone and be out of our lives and out of our business. But to the extent that they are doing stupid things like this clown Tommy Tuberville, you got to sort of hopefully set them straight. And also, you know, you can push back hard if they're a true enemy like a Ted Cruz or Greg Abbott in Texas. We have the law on our side. You know, we have freedom of speech. You can tell, you know, this guy Abbott saying, you know, we will have absolutely no Sharia whatsoever. No, you won't, bro. You're in America. In America, we have freedom of speech and we have freedom of religion. And you have a right. Anybody has a right to follow whatever version of Sharia they want. And there's nothing you can do about it unless they commit a crime. And then it's the same as everybody else. You know, if you want to kill a gay person, well, that's illegal. It doesn't matter if you're an extremist Christian or an extremist Muslim or an extremist atheist. You're not allowed to kill somebody. So it's irrelevant. It's a toothless, nonsensical argument designed to appeal to ignorant bigots. And it's a shame and it's embarrassing, especially as somebody who had a Republican, you know, ticket on my name. And I'm still a member of the party. I think it's important to note there's very different types of Republicans. I'm like Thomas Massie is a very different type of thing than John McCain. But just the same, it's embarrassing for anybody to have this sort of level of bigotry. I know you see it even more than I do, which is a lot. The flippant ease with which people criticize a religion of 2 billion people based on total ignorance is shameful. And it's something that should be embarrassing, you know, especially to people on the right, but also, you know, like I said, plenty of people on the left have those issues as well.
Yeah, Tommy Massie, for those that don't know, he was not too long ago on the Tucker Carlson show, and he had explained to Tucker, he was shocked also, Tucker, that when Massie was describing that every congressman, was it, senator, has an AIPAC handler. That's the Massie, yeah. Correct? Yeah. Now,
and they visit every candidate too, but they didn't visit me, which I think is a good achievement.
Let's, before we conclude, just read a couple more of your tweets. And it's very, very refreshing after seeing hundreds, I mean, of anti-Muslim, anti-Islam tweets. And I'm always thinking, are these just bots? I'm thinking like, you know, just keep popping up in your timeline. And then I see someone who's a critical thinker, someone who's a thinking man like yourself. And I said, wow, I'd love to talk to this man. And here we are. And this is one of those tweets here. You say, Taqiyya is an invented by, and you guys can see this here at Bruce Fenton on X. And the tweet says, Taqiyya is an invented by some dude 500 years after the founding of Islam. He came up with the idea right after a war relative to hiding who you are if you would be put in danger. The dude was in a minority sect of Islam that 90% of Muslims are not even a member of. Yeah, and this is a response to a person who was like, Bruce, don't fall for the Taqiyya. If you ask an average Muslim, you say, what is Taqiyya? They're like, we have no idea. And I remember talking to one scholar in Islam in the beginning when I first started practicing, and he said, no, this is not in the Quran or the Sunnah. Now, there is, and I don't know if you know, but just for the audience, like there is even exceptions if you're, let's say, your wife cooks you some food and it's really bad. And then there's details of how you can go about these things. And you're allowed to say, why, you know, my wife, was great, even though she put too much salt, for example. Or you're trying to reconcile between two people, two brothers, let's say, you know, they've been split apart. And you go back and say, look, man, he loves you, man. But he didn't say that. But he said he loves you. But to deceive someone, you know, to deceive them and lie about your faith to try to bring someone over, at the end, they're going to find out the truth that you were lying and you're just doing more major harm. It just makes no sense. But people are suspicious about Muslims because of this term has been thrown out, and they're just like, they're just lying about everything. And I think people who follow a Machiavellian lifestyle, you know, follow his teachings, are projecting onto us, which we are far from, because anybody who reads the Quran, they can just ChatGPT this stuff, and they'll see how, you know, much it's about being truthful, about being honest, and how that quality of lying is something so despised and looked down upon in Islam. Your thoughts?
Yeah, it's a typical propaganda point. So this idea that because, you know, like I say, somebody 500 years after Islam came up with this taqiyya point, okay, you know, there's people now, the anti-Muslim hate sites are like, aha, Muslims invented lying, and it's part of the religion, and they all lie because of it. You know, like you said, there's a whole bunch of Muslims never even heard of this term. It's certainly not a thing that's taught. It's just an absurd notion to think that, like, everybody in a religion lies, and that your proof of it is like, aha, I know this term, taqiyya. I am intellectual. I've figured it out. You know, it's the same people, like, you know, who use the word Sharia. Is just like, you know, I mean, the other midway comment, well, you know, I've studied the Quran, and it's very, very evil. No, you didn't study the Quran, bro. You went to an anti-Muslim hate site and you read the same stupid quotes that I've heard 10,000 times. Oh, kill them where they find them. Okay, did you read the words before that? No, you didn't. Because he's talking about people who are attacking you, if they keep attacking you. You know, it's like, have some basic originality. You know, it's just a silly midwit comment to be like, and it's brilliant. You know, a lot of the propaganda is very sophisticated. You don't want to underestimate the power of it. When you see things again and again, it does have an effect on people. And if you say, well, the religion says to lie, then that makes you, it makes it easy to discount anything. You make any argument in the world. You say, Eddie's background is blue. Well, you know that they lie. It's in their official, you know, religion. It's like, no, it isn't. Well, you're lying about that too. You know, these are clowns. You know, I'm doing my Doug Murray impersonation there with the finger in you. Oh, yes. You know, like you're some sort of intellectual. They're not intellectuals. It's just a silly notion. It's right up there with the, you know, they hate freedom. You know, they hate America because it's free, this kind of thing. You know, these are midwit, very, very low level arguments that, you know, frankly, if they had more creativity, it would be more believable. But sadly, you know, you hit it again and again and again and again, and people think that they're being intellectual and saying like, oh, taqiyya says they're allowed to lie, therefore everything is a lie. You know, that adds up, and it does have an effect on people. It shouldn't, because it's so ridiculous, but you hear it again and again and again enough, you have people that think it's true. And you know, it's just another example of the kind of propaganda that this massive propaganda machine pushes, that makes people, you know, think negative things about Muslims. And why? Because there's billions and billions of dollars at it. And Muslim is very decentralized. It's interesting. You know, there's no pope in Islam. There's no, they don't have the centralization that you might have in other religions there. And because it's decentralized and there's a lot of different types of Muslims, it's harder to have like a unified front that says, no, this is nonsense. So when you have billions of dollars in propaganda trying to make Muslims look bad, and you don't have billions of dollars trying to tell the truth, you end up with a lot of, you know, these kind of memes that's, you know, those comments, when I make a comment like, you know, there's a few of them, this one and the other one that you mentioned, where if I say something positive about Islam and it goes viral, I'll get hundreds of the same comments. And it is almost like they're bots. You know, they'll have the hate verses from the Quran, and they have this little, it's the same screenshot 100 times. It's the same 12 quotes. You know the 12 quotes they're going to pick. You know the same things they're going to say. You know the same the ways they're going to try and insult the prophet. They're going to you know, you we can it is very, very predictable because they've been programmed by propaganda. And I, you know, so in my case, The reason that I broke away from the propaganda was because I was exposed to it more, particularly, well, for one, there was two things. Early on, I've always been skeptical. My dad was in advertising. And he taught me the power of how everybody lies in ads and how to be skeptical. So I had a skeptical mind. I knew I was being lied to during the first Gulf War because the lies were just so ridiculous. You know, they hate America because we're free. I'm just, even as a 19-year-old sitting there in boot camp, I'm like, really? Come on. They hate us because we're free. Are you sure? It's nothing that we did in the whole world that would make anybody hate us. It's really because we're free. And your solution to that is to make us less free. So what? They don't hate us anymore. It just didn't jive with me. But as I learned more and then eventually being exposed to real Muslims, and especially living in, you know, I lived in Saudi Arabia for 7 years, and I have residency in the UAE, and I met thousands and thousands of Muslims, and that, you know, journey, I was really lucky because I got to see, like, oh, wait a minute, these are not people that believe that they're going to strip on a car bomb and get 72 virgins. You know, that's not a thing. That's not a thing. It's not, like I say, it's not 10%. It's not 1%. It's not even 0.1%. It's just not a thing. And helping people break out of that cartoon character version of Islam is one of the most important things we can do. And it's hard, but you know, you do great. I mean, you reach a huge audience, and I hope that a lot of people see it, and especially non-Muslims. And people who, you know, I like finding the common ground that we have. And it's particularly interesting in today's political climate. There's a lot of people, a lot of the fans of this senator that you showed, Tommy Tuberville, I know his kind of fans. I know the Republicans that would vote for him. A lot of them are good people who've just been fooled. And they have radically wrong ideas about it. Do you know, a lot of people think Muslims are woke. They think Muslims are in favor of the LGBTQIA2S+. You know, because they associate Muslims with the left, and they think that, and interestingly, there's only a handful of Muslims that are in office, and most of them are on the left. But there's kind of coincidence.
There's a new one now, like Muslim Marxist. There are people calling them Marxists. Yeah. Have you heard that?
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's one of the interesting things about Mamdani is that people assume that because he's pro-trans, pro-woke, that's a Muslim thing. And he does have a lot of Muslim supporters, but overwhelmingly the Muslim supporters are saying, like, I don't like that stuff, but in spite of it, I'm going to support him because he's anti-Zionist. That's why he would get most Muslim support. It's certainly not a Muslim tenet for people to be woke, which is why a lot of them are naturally aligned with the Republicans, but they don't want to join with Republicans either, because you have a bunch of Ted Cruz's and Greg Abbott's calling, you know, talking about Sharia and saying that you know, Islam doesn't belong in America. But which is really unfortunate, because the values among a lot of the people on the right are very much Muslim values. A lot of, you know, being anti-woke, pro-family, you know, based tradition lifestyle. You know, it's funny. Some of the most cutting edge influencers, they sound like imams from 100 years ago. You know, like the real cool cutting edge thing now is like, go work out, lift weights, grow a beard, eat meat, have a family, have a bunch of kids real young. It's like, well, yeah, that's about, I mean, you could be an imam with that speech, you know, instead of your social media influencer, you know. So it is interesting. The political thing is interesting with the left, particularly. There isn't many Republicans that have run for office, you know, like I did. It's not a common thing. But it should be. But I don't blame them for not doing it, because who would want to be associated with a party with people like Ted Cruz and Tommy Tuberville? Mm-hmm. I don't blame, it's hard for me to go to Muslims and say, oh yeah, you know, Republicans are the ones to go with, because they're just going to pull back and say, well, what about these 12 Republicans who are saying utterly ridiculous, you know, Dick Cheney era propaganda. Dick Cheney's dead, but his propaganda from 25 years ago still lives on, you know, and that propaganda is wrong. And that's why they fear people like me, people like Tucker Carlson, you know, people on the right who question the narrative, who say, gee, maybe the America Second policies are wrong, and maybe the whole dehumanization of 2 billion people is false also. And so the more people that realize that and wake up to that, then I think they'll understand the truth and probably find out that we have a lot more in common.
A lot more in common. Let's do one more before we conclude. You had a person, and this is very common. People say, "Oh, they denied Jesus. They denied Jesus as God. They call for submission to Islam. They call for jihad and murder of Christians and Jews." This reminds me of when I had a private conversation with Charlie Kirk on the phone. We spoke for about 45 minutes, and he was also someone who said, "I was taught to hate Islam." This is what he told me personally on the phone. And then he asked me questions like this. He asked me, he said, "Look, Eddie, I'm not trying to set you up or anything. And I want to go ahead and," he asked me very questions that you can tell where a person's at, you know, how they've been kind of conditioned. And this is one of the things that imagine someone like Charlie Kirk, who's very intelligent, somebody who's, you think, you know, he went to college, didn't finish college, but he's a very smart, common sense kind of guy. But when it comes to Islam, people like him and many others, they just been, became victims to this billion-dollar hate industry. So that you respond, Muslims are definitely do not deny Jesus or God. Obviously, Muslims believe in Jesus and the God of Abraham, Moses, and Noah. And then you talk about jihad, meaning the struggle and strive. Muslims don't call for murder of Christians. This is what Charlie Kirk thought. Does your Quran teach the murder of Christians and to kill Christians? So you beautifully responded to this. You see a lot of this also, right? This kind of nonsense.
Yeah. And I try, that's a good example of trying to build bridges and show the common ground. A lot of people, it was funny. I told somebody one time, I said, "You know, Muslims believe in Jesus." She says, "Well, won't the other Muslims kill them if they find out?" And I said, "No, all of them believe in Jesus. She just didn't believe me." And when I was in Saudi Arabia, we were out in the desert and there's shells there. Somebody said, "Look, these are shells from the Great Flood." And there's some Christians with us. And I like that kind of common ground, you know, finding those kind of things. And, you know, the jihad word is misused, just like Sharia, just like burqa, just like taqiyya, you know. Jihad is misunderstood. People don't understand Muslims believe in Jesus. And the God is the same God. Now, a lot of people get really angry about that and argue about it. I don't want to spend a lot of time arguing with people about it, but it is undoubtable that Muslims believe in the God of Abraham. You know, the footsteps of Abraham are right outside the Kaaba. And, it's definitely the same Abraham. Now, you could say there's all kinds of things you disagree with. You know, I don't like focusing on differences. There's a lot more differences. This kind of the idea of Judeo-Christian, like, oh, you know, there's three branches of Abraham, Isaac and Ishmael, and there's three great religions that came from this same tree, but, you know, two of them are over here and one of them's over here. I don't like that idea. And our founding fathers didn't think that. Our founding fathers viewed it much more closely. And a lot of them were Unitarians, which is interesting because which is much closer to Islam. Their belief in the Trinity is they didn't really believe in the Trinity the way that many Christians, other Christians do. So they're kind of, you know, halfway there to being Muslims. But this idea that like, oh, these two are, you know, together versus these barbarians over here, that's propaganda. And that's relatively recent propaganda, probably mostly last 50 years. There's a lot of differences that the Jewish faith has with the nature of understanding of Jesus also. And if you want to focus on differences, you could focus on that. I don't think that's productive either. If you're a Christian, I think it's better to focus on the things that you do agree with, but it is the same God. You could say all 2 billion Muslims are wrong. Okay, that's fine. You could disagree with them all, but you can't deny that that's what they believe. You can't deny that they believe in the God of Abraham. It literally says Abraham. His footsteps are right there at the Kaaba. The Kaaba was the house of Abraham. It's where he preached. Noah, Moses, you know, they're in the Islamic faith. It's again, the, you know, kind of basic misunderstanding, from a mountain of propaganda. And I hope that more, it's hard for people, it's hard for Muslims to go out and reach out and talk to people, And also, it's sometimes when you know something, one weakness I have in investing is once I learn something I don't know for 10 years and I'll take a year learning it. Once I learn it, I assume everybody learns it, you know? And sometimes, you know, going back to the basics makes sense. You know, like it was probably a great conversation with you. I disagreed with Charlie Kirk very strongly on Israel policy and on Islam. But I cried when he died and I was very sad and I went to his vigils. Because nobody should be killed over words. And I agreed with them a lot of stuff too. I agreed with them on the wokeism and on a lot of economic things and other stuff. And I really, really wished that I would have been able to talk to Charlie, because I would have wanted to talk to him about Islam, and I would have talked, and I would have, and I can relate, you know, I'm a bearded New Hampshire redneck gun toting, guy, veteran. You know, I can reach people sometimes. You know, it's harder for somebody to say that I'm, you know, the guy who believes in 72 virgins or whatever, right? You know, that I'm secretly using my tekia to invade America or whatever. If I would have won, I would have been the first Muslim U.S. senator. And because of, you know, who I am and how I look and my background and stuff, I can sometimes reach people better. I can talk to other Republicans and say, hey man, you've been fed lies. You know, you've been fed lies about 98 other topics. Why are you believing this one? Why are you believing Dick Cheney era propaganda from 20 something years ago? And I think that, you know, I didn't know Charlie, but I know Charlie, you know, I know his kind of people. I literally ran for office and met 1,000 people just like Charlie. And I know his supporters. I know some people who are very close to him. I know his friends. I know how he thinks. I know these folks. And like I say, most of them are good people. And I think and believe that he was just fooled. I don't think he was co-opted. I don't think he was a bad guy. If I believed the same thing that he did, maybe a different path. You know, the world was different. I might have believed the lies that I was taught in the military. And I might have gone down a different path. And some people double down. Some people become an identity. You know, they become Robert Spencer. You write a book on it, then you can never back down. You know, it becomes part of your identity. Tommy Robinson is like probably this close. You know, it'd be very hard. But you never know. Maybe he'll convert. You know, but you know, you can get to a point where it's harder to go back on what you say if you make it your identity. But for a lot of people, that, you know, they're still open-minded enough, you can tell them the truth and try and reach them. And I wish I could have done that with Charlie, because I think that he was always willing to listen. And that's one thing that everybody should respect about him, is what he did, especially on the college campuses, being able to take people and talk. And that's what we need to do. We need to just talk to people and say, hey, here's what I believe, here's what I don't believe, here's what Islam is and isn't. And, you know, maybe we get somewhere, and that's a way to chip through the propaganda, because you do need to spend 10 times as much to tell a lie versus the truth. The truth comes forward, and skeptical people who are intelligent people, they'll know a lie when they see it, and they can hopefully move forward and realize they've been lied to, just like I was.
Yeah, I wish someone like you. I was very close to meeting with him. We were in discussions to meet in person, but we have other Charlie Kirks out there right now, and it seems like many are, I don't know what it is, but when you invite them to sit and talk, it's like, I don't know, many, I mean, you're a Republican and you're brave and you're sitting and you're talking, and I think we're making history here, where hopefully people will see this, and people like the Hodges twins and others out there will kind of take the opportunity now to talk to someone like you, a Republican, to talk with someone like me, who's an American, loves my country, instead of getting these talking points from the hate industry. You know, sit, talk, and go ahead. Let's ascertain what is the truth. And I commend you for that. Commend you for coming on and having a discussion.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, you're doing great work.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Tell us, before we conclude, we've got a couple minutes, what's with the Bitcoin market right now? What do you advise people to do with Bitcoin?
Well, you know, it's sound money, and it ties to there's one of the most fascinating topics to me is the Muslims. I'm in all these Muslim Bitcoiner groups, and I have some friends. There's a couple of them, you know, they probably make an interesting guess. There's some people who are like genuine scholars. I'm very far from a scholar. I wish I was, but there's people who are very, very knowledgeable about Islam, you know, trained at Medina University and so on, and they're experts on Bitcoin. And I'm fascinated by the human freedom and human rights aspect and the intersection with Islam, because the fiat money, the dollar that we have, it's phony. It's printed from thin air. It's a scam. It's a scam. And the Quran is against scams. You know, scamming is not right. And if you have a guy that can just, or a woman, Janet Yellen, who can just print money from thin air and give it to war and for-profit prisons and cronies and, you know, bad science and everything else, that's immoral and it's wrong. And it's actually deeply evil. We wouldn't have had the Iraq war without the fiat money printer system. And what Bitcoin is, it's like gold. It's like digital gold. It can't be printed from thin air. Janet Yellen and Jerome Powell and Christine Lagarde have no power to make more Bitcoin. It's governed by the laws of code and math. And that is a sound money that you can't take to do evil things. You have to ask somebody for it, and they're not going to give it to you to do another Iraq war or Afghanistan war. So it's more moral and ethical money that is not based on the scam of fiat. And it's interesting. Oh, I wish I knew his name. He's I believe he's a friend of Dr. Ali, who you had on recently. But there's a scholar. He's not a Bitcoin scholar. He's a much older gentleman, and he says fiat is haram. You know, that's above my pay grade. In my heart, I feel that. I certainly can't argue it and quote hadiths and stuff about why. But to me, it seems like fiat money, the U.S. dollar, is a scam. It's printed from thin air. It's based on debt. It's based on riba. There's people 10,000 times more intelligent than me who can actually make a solid Islamic case about that. But to me, at a base level, it is a scam. Whereas gold, or digital gold in the case of Bitcoin, is not. It's based on math and code. And there's nothing scammy about that. It was given away for free. Nobody got anything. It's not based on riba. It's not based on debt. And most importantly, you can't just print a button from thin air and print money to create wars all over the world. So Bitcoin is a moral money. I think it's an Islamic money. I think it's a moral and ethical money, forgetting the Islam angle. It is a moral and ethical form of money that can't be manipulated and printed from thin air like a lot of the other forms of money in the world. And that's a big deal. And that's why I think it has value, because it's outside the system. And whether people are Muslim or not, or on their right or on the left, interestingly, a lot of the people on the left understand this greatly. A lot of people on the left are like, hey, the whole system's broken. It's corrupt. The bankers get bailouts and bonuses and government contractors and fat cats and on and on. Yeah, exactly. We just see the problem, the solution differently. The problem, they're correct. The problem is the money's broken. The money is a scam. The money can be printed from thin air, just like a child. Like if you went to a six-year-old child and said, don't you wish, you know, you had a magic wand to just make money from thin air, that's not moral, because bad things end up being done with that money, and it devalues it robs everybody. Your price of milk and bread goes up because they're printing money from thin air to send it to Israel and send it to Ukraine and send it to for-profit prisons. And, you know, Saifedean, great Muslim brother who wrote the Bitcoin Standard. He wrote a book called The Fiat Standard. And he talks about all the problems with the US dollar that relate to this phony money. And my favorite chapter is the chapter on food. Even obesity tracks to this phony, broken money. And it stands to me very reasonable that the message of God would say, Reba, what's the exact verse? Reba makes you insane, basically. Is what it says in the Quran. And why? Why would God say this? I think it's reasonable to say that one of the most evil things on the planet is this fiat money system, this broken debt-based, Reba-based system that causes war and destruction and for-profit prisons and never-ending forever wars and military misadventures in Iraq and Afghanistan and all kinds of other stupidity. If you show me some ridiculous study that says men can turn into women because they feel like it, that study is probably funded by government grants, which trace back to the fiat system. Saifedean in his book talks about how even obesity tracks to corn syrup subsidies and these other things that all relate back to this broken, horrible, evil, absolutely destructive fiat system. And you can't underestimate the evil. You have a ton of viewers. You go to your viewers and you say, name the top 10 problems in the world. in the last 20 years. They're going to say Israel. They're going to say Afghanistan. They're going to say Iraq. Some of them might say obesity. Some of them might say wokeism. Some of them might say bad junk science. Some of them might say, you know, COVID tyranny. Whatever the problem is, they say, it all traces back to fiat. It all traces back to this broken, corrupt, Reba-based system. And Bitcoin's an alternative to that. And like I say, even people who have no idea about religion, right or left, they understand that the system is broken. You could be an atheist on the left or the right, and you can still look at it and say, wait a minute, the guys who gave these bad, stupid loans in 2008 and all their banks were about to go under, they all made hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars from hundreds of billions of dollars in bailouts from a phony money system. Anybody can look at that and see that it's broken. The system is deeply, deeply broken. And gold was a great solution, but gold is not as easily in our digital world to move around as Bitcoin. So to me, that's what brought me into Bitcoin. It's not about number go up. I've been very fortunate and blessed, thank God, that I've been able to do well financially. But that's not the thing. What matters is breaking away from a broken, corrupt system that has been responsible for massive evil and massive death. And to me, that's what Bitcoin is about. And like I say, I'm not really even barely qualified to talk about this. There's a lot of people much smarter than me who could tell you all about it. But I would urge everybody to look into it if that resonates with you. You know, look at this. Look up the Fed. Learn about the Federal Reserve. And you know, the Federal Reserve is a private corporation. You know, it's not even part of the federal government. It's just a private corporation of a bunch of ultra rich and powerful banksters. And they have the ability to print money from thin air. I mean, that's a crazy system. So people should learn about the Fed. You know, Ron Paul has been talking about that, former Congress member, been talking about that for 30, 40 years. Learn about the Fed, learn about the nature of money. A lot of us spend a lot of time thinking about money, but very few people, if you say, what is money? A lot of people can't answer that. And there's properties and principles about what makes money money. Can government just print it out of thin air? No, because if they could, Zimbabwe would be the richest country in the world. I have $1 trillion Zimbabwe note I carry around in my pocket. It's not worth anything because governments can't make money worth something. It has to be scarce and have other properties that gold has and that Bitcoin has. So yeah, I think it's interesting. I think it all kind of ties in with the human rights and the freedom and you know, in my opinion, Islam as well.
Bruce Fenton at Bruce Fenton. Thank you so much for spending some time. I really enjoyed talking with you.
You too. Great to talk to you.
Hopefully we'll meet again.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.